Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 470 for comics originally released on August 10th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Superwoman number 1. This is, of course, part of the Rebirth initiative, where DC is rebirthing things, whatever the hell that means. This is written by Phil Jimenez. It is drawn by Phil Jimenez. It is more or less everything by Phil Jimenez. I mean, he's got an anchor, he's got a colors, he's got a letter, but this had what I consider to be very quintessential Phil Jimenez work in this, on the writing and the art. How familiar are you with Phil, his work?
Oh, I know the name. I've read stuff that his name is on. I'm not, I don't know his history.
Okay. He has been, I'm going to say, inactive for a while, at least off my radar for a while. But at one point, he did a Justice League Titans miniseries, and he was almost, I don't want to say the next up-and-coming George Perez, but he's very much a fan of George Perez, very much in the same kind of art style, and also a fairly good writer. So with him working on this, that, you know, had me very interested. The whole concept of Superwoman, they've had various Superwomen in the past. They had one way back in the day that was from the future and stuff. They've had another one that was Lucy Lane for a bit, and I think maybe one or two others since then. This time we're getting, of course, Lois Lane. I say of course as if that clarifies things, because we're running around in a world right now with DC where there are more than one Lois Lane. And that in and of itself, I think, causes a little bit of confusion. I'll be honest, this issue was not what I had expected. And frankly, it was a bit better than I had expected. I wasn't sure exactly what I was thinking I was going to get, but I really enjoyed the interplay between Lois Lane and Lana Lang. I thought Lana was well used initially as that kind of tech support person or the advisor or whatever. We got a lot more of Lex Luthor claiming to be Superman in this issue than I was expecting. But, I mean, this is taking place really in the heart of Metropolis, in the midst of all of the stuff going on with Action Comics and stuff like that. This was just a lot of fun. What were your thoughts overall on this?
Yeah, overall, I thought it was really, really strong, and it got better as it went along. Kind of reveal after reveal, and it was really, really a good read and fun and exciting. And there was lots of stuff going on and characters that you were really gravitating to. And it was a really good first issue and that I was very impressed by.
The one thing that surprised me the most, and there was plenty of things that surprised me in this issue, but not only just how much I enjoyed this issue, it very much resonated with me in much the way that Action Comics and Detective Comics are kind of working for me right now, more so than many of their other books at DC. But this just showed how much could be done in a single issue.
Yeah.
And more importantly, and more impressively, a single 20-page issue.
Yeah.
Well, I actually went and counted the pages, and when I started counting them, I was thinking it's more than 20, given how much has happened in here. Because just a ton of stuff happens in this issue. It just scene after scene after scene, reveal after reveal, thing after thing. It was amazing.
I mean, there were a couple areas where I felt the cross cutting back and forth between the farm and present day that got a little. There was too much of it, too much cutting back and forth, I thought. At times, and there were a couple just plot points in here where they just occurred, and I thought, well, I've been reading Action, and I've been reading Superman, Lois, and Clark, and I'm wondering why I don't know this information and who and how this person has these powers and things. So there were a couple things where I was just like, doggone, I thought I was plugged in to this area of DC, but I must have missed something.
Were you confused how Lois had her powers or how the other person?
Both. Both. I didn't realize that there during that the supernova when Superman died that he had that had passed on powers to them. I missed that somehow.
This revealed that.
Okay.
It had not been revealed otherwise, and I would need to reread that issue to see if there was any visual indication that would lead us to expect this.
I just thought maybe I had missed that somewhere, or it was in another story, and because the way it was kind of just offhanded, a panel or two that just kind of, well, this is what happened. Of course, this is what happened. You all remember. And and I thought, well, I'm not really sure I ever saw that happen.
Well, this is where me reading just about everything that DC does really helps, because I know, and I don't necessarily remember it all, but I at least have an idea, have I seen this before or not? But this is also something where it shows just a certain degree of how things are a little confusing right now in the Metropolis area around a couple of characters in the Superman franchise. Specifically, you know, as we're working through this transition from the new 52 Superman to the older one, who also has a Lois Lane, they could have clearly established, and I think they kind of did early on, but they could have done it even more clear as to which Lois this was. You know, I'm kind of wanting to
see... Well, this is not the Lois and Clark Lois Lane.
Correct. And I want to see this Lois meet the new Superboy, John Kent.
Okay.
That's got to confuse the kid.
It's got to be confusing for our quote-unquote new reader that we're always talking about and trying to recruit and wanting to walk in those comic shop doors and pick this up off the rack. This would be confusing, I think.
I think it's confusing for new readers, a little confusing for long-time readers, and certainly potentially very, very confusing for casual readers, people who are kind of bouncing in and out. I mean, if you've missed the fact that there are two Loises, that may actually be to your advantage here.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's just as they're trying to integrate and swap out Supermans, that we're going to have some potential for some great stories, but also a little, oh, wait, what's going on where? How's this playing out? And then, of course, they reference the whole Clark Kent thing going on.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we've just, you know, killed a Superman, replaced him, and now we've got another Clark Kent over in Action Comics. And there's talk in the upcoming solicit of Lois Lane going back to work at the Daily Planet. And I'm like, well, wait a sec. Which Lois Lane? This one? Not this one? And I liked how they established early on that all the visuals of Superwoman, her face is somehow blurred. I mean, they don't establish how or why, but there's an aspect of, you know, how she's that she is keeping her identity secret, even though people can clearly see who she is, which is in and of itself rather confusing. Lois Lane, of course, not low profile kind of individual. The thing that got me was about really literally at the halfway point, right at the staple. We get a major reveal there that, from my perspective, came out of nowhere and was just, wow, that's really cool. I didn't think they were going to go in that direction. And combine that with the final page, you know, event there, this title could go in a completely different direction than we were initially led to believe. And the next issue of this, I think, is going to be particularly telling in terms of is this a cliffhanger they backpedal on a little bit? Do they go in this direction full hog? And is some of what we're seeing maybe on the covers of future solicits a little bit misleading or not? I mean, I don't know where they're going, and I like that aspect of it. And there's a part of this story that thematically and not so much in terms of tone, but in terms of imaginativeness, reminds me of kind of Silver Age Superman family stories. You know, that's when we originally got the Superman Red, Superman Blue, which they later did the electric versions of, you know, a decade or two back. But that's also when we got a lot of the Lois versus Lana sorts of stories and whatnot. And we get, again, the fun interplay between those two in this. It's just, I don't know what direction they're going. I'm good with that. I love how this is integral to what's going on in the Superman titles without having Superman show up. And I just see so much fun potential with this series.
It wasn't all fun in this issue. I mean, there are some dire circumstances that occurred.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not saying it was fun for the characters.
But we had fun.
Fun for me to read.
Yes.
You know, and it ended on a, wait a sec, what just happened and where are they going to go with that?
And what does that mean for this title?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and the fact that I can envision, you know, a number of very, what I think are fun situations, cool situations. Again, John Kent potentially meeting this Lois Lane superwoman. First thing he's going to say is, hey, mom, and she's going to be, who the hell are you, kid? Just because we both have an S doesn't mean I'm your mother. I mean, those sorts of situations could be fun. Plus, the note they end on opens up just a completely different set of situations. And, you know, the whole status quo here for Lana. It's just, to me, this was a ton of fun. Incredibly story dense in a great way. I do have some confusion here or there as to where they're going and some stuff like that. But I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, me too. How far are we going? How far are we going to talk about this? Are we going to try to keep it spoiler free for folks, or do you want to give them a tag here?
Let's keep it spoiler free. I think.
Okay.
It's one of those moments that if you know something going in, it changes the read of the story. I'm thinking.
Would me asking who the monster is be a spoiler?
No, I don't think so. And I'm not sure if I've got a great answer. I see a couple of potentials. I almost want to go with it looks like a bizarro superwoman.
Yeah, it's what it looks like.
But I can't figure out how that could have come to be so quickly.
Yeah.
The other thing that was teased in the solicit was Ultra Woman. So it could be a bizarro or cloned version of Ultra Woman, which was the crime syndicate Wonder Woman, essentially, unless I'm getting confused. No, that was, or was that character also called Superwoman? And it was Ultraman that was the Superman.
Yeah.
There's so much continuity, I can't keep it straight anymore.
It's tough. But yeah, I've got to pile on here because I thought I was going to get one thing, and it evolved and changed all within a matter of 20 pages. I got stronger, built momentum as the story progressed, and you know, pulled Lex Luthor in, and he was fun and just as dumbfounded as we were as readers. Like, what is going on? Who are these people? And that was great. Some fun big action scenes with a runaway battleship. That was cool. There's so much cool stuff in here, and such good interplay between Lois and Lana, and then. As we find out who the bad guy is, there's so much here that propels you into issue two, and there's so much here that was jammed into issue one that you feel like you darn well got your $2.99 worth, and you're signed up for more. So, you know, I thought it started a little slow, but it really really worked and finished strong at the end. Besides a little bit of confusion with the back and forth between the a few things, I still think it was a great read, and I gave it A-.
I can understand that. I was going to go with an A-, but the more I thought about it, the more I went with just a solid A. I see your point about the cutting back and forth. I think they did good stuff with some of the panel borders and a few things there, trying to keep it clear, but I do think that is something that some people may have problems with. The other thing I think some people might have problems with is there are a couple of pages that just have a ton of dialogue.
Yeah. And I think after you read it, you're okay with the cutting. I mean, because what they're trying to do is set this up, and they have to pace it a certain way. But while you're in the moment reading it, it's a little bit of, I'm like, come on, pick a past or a future or a present and stick with it for a while. Don't keep coming back so fast. And I think I understand why he did it, but I still don't know if he needed to do it as much.
It worked well for me, and that's the sort of thing that often does not.
Yeah.
But so I see exactly where you're coming from, and I think it's a valid complaint.
But still, what a great, great, great issue. And this is the kind of stuff that I felt was promised to us by DC Universe Rebirth. These kind of reimagining and engaging stories that were new and but with some of the old. And this is it. This is the kind of thing I want.
Yeah. I do have some reservations about taking existing supporting cast members and turning them into superheroes, you know, with Lois and stuff like that. But it's not like it's a new sort of a phenomenon. I mean, go back to the whole Jimmy Olsen stuff way back in the day.
yeah, you're rolling your eyes a little bit as it's happening, and you're thinking, oh, really? That's how it happened? And but then you just keep reading. And
but if it's good, I'm okay taking a few things. I wouldn't have gone that way, but, you know, whatever.
Let's see what they do with it, and it was handled really well.
It does remind me a little bit of the first Superman issue of the New 52 by George Perez, where I thought he did some really great stuff, a similarly dense story in the first issue. It's just a question of, with such a strong launch, it's a tough act to follow. And I certainly think Phil Jimenez has the capability of doing it, and I certainly hope he does. This could be a really good breakout hit for DC.
Yeah, hope so.
That having been said, shall we move over to Marvel? We've got all new X-Men number 12. This is written by Dennis Hopeless, and we've got the art by Mark Bagley. Now, have you been following this title?
No, I dumped it.
I can understand that. Previous storyline had been a Apocalypse War storyline dealing mainly with Beast and Apocalypse back in the past. I read the final chapter of that right before reading this, and I don't think you missed much. This is pretty much feels like a standalone issue. At the very least, it's the start of an story arc. Either way, it's something where I felt they, since they're starting a story arc here, or story issue, or even done them on whatever, there are one or two things they could have and should have done here to reestablish the scene, or a few little facts here and there, for those of us that may be forgetful, or I guess I haven't been paying enough attention. On the first page here, we've got a couple of the new X-Men outside of the van that's towing their trailer, talking about, hey, we're going to go do stuff. And then we spend a little bit of time inside the trailer. And by trailer, I mean literally it's a mobile homey, you know, trailer that you tow behind, like, in this case, I guess, a VW van or whatever, that X-23, or Wolverine, as she's called today, and young Cyclops are in. That is, like, mansion size on the inside, but normal, fits within a lane of traffic trailer on the outside. At first, it took me, well, what's going on here? And I guess it's bigger on the inside than the outside.
But you're used to that. You're a Doctor Who guy.
I'm a Doctor Who guy, but would it have killed them to have established that?
Yeah.
You know, I've read the entire volume of this and the previous volume of this, and I'm sure maybe somewhere they established this.
Yeah, it was in there.
But, dude, would it have killed them to have a line of dialogue to reassert that for new readers?
Yeah, you could definitely assume, well, they were next to that van, but now they're somewhere else.
There's nothing that firmly places X-23 and Cyclops in the trailer other than Angel flying out on that first page.
Yeah, and, you know, Wolverine in here, you know, I'm reading All New Wolverine by Tom Taylor, and it's great. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. And this ain't her. Different character entirely, and I prefer Tom Taylor's. So that was tough. That right off the bat, I just didn't like the interpretation of the character, and I feel like that's going to be uphill for the book for the rest of the thing, just because I have that baggage coming in.
That's fair. That's fair. How did this issue work for you then?
It wasn't great. It was okay. It was something that I read, and I didn't think it was a bad issue, but it wasn't strong enough to make me want to either regret dropping it or make me want to start reading it again. And I don't like the relationship between Angel and her and Wolverine at all. I don't see it. Doesn't work for me. And I don't see the chemistry at all. And maybe it's established in previous volumes and things, but here it just doesn't work.
I do think the romance aspect here fell flat. I think they've tried to establish the relationship between Wolverine and Angel in the pages of this title, but it's also more or less completely missing from her own title, although they've touched on it a little there.
Yeah, I don't even remember them touching on it there.
I thought they did. Maybe I'm just confusing titles. They've got so many X-books.
Like, are you thinking like a page or a panel? Or
I thought he had shown up at one point, but I may be confusing this title and that.
Maybe.
That's one of the downsides of reading as much as I do. But correctly attributing which scene to which title is not always easy. The hang-up I had with this issue, and I think the ones you have are perfectly reasonable, mine are of a completely different sort. The whole thing, not the whole thing, a lot of the early part of the issue is basically Wolverine just needs to kind of go let off some steam and go be herself. which involves adventuring. She's a Wolverine. Go figure it out. I mean, so Cyclops, who's wheelchair bound in this trailer, is like, hey, I've made a list of all these missions somebody could go on, but I can't go.
Yeah, he's got it all plotted out. It's all laid out for you. Just easy one and dones that could have, blown off that steam and relieved that stress for her.
You know, he's a consummate planner and stuff, so he's planned all this out. All she's got to do is go have the adventure and then tell him all about it. Okay, convenient setup, fine. And he's like, here's the special weapon, the backpack, which is pickles and a bunch of junk food to keep him going for, a day and a half? Because Pickles is one of the Bamfs. How familiar are you with the Bamfs?
Yeah, I get it.
Well, I don't, because these things were originally fictional story things from an old X-Men story that I think Kitty was telling to Ileana long before she grew up and became Magic.
They've been a staple of this volume, or this title, through multiple volumes, though.
Absolutely.
Bamfs throughout.
Bamfs are essentially small Nightcrawler creatures. They don't speak. They can teleport. But Nightcrawler, his teleport is limited pretty much to line of sight and to a reasonable distance. They are off in, where did, Angel was talking about the Milan Fashion Week. So they're in Milan, Italy. Not that they really clarify it's Milan, Italy, but that's where they seem to be. That's where I'm taking them as a starting point. First mission is in Brazil. I'm like, well, that's certainly not line of sight. That's not, a couple of miles, even, really good line of sight, 100 miles away. I mean, I actually went to the web and pulled up freemaptools.com. How far is it between X and Y? And it's like 5,675 miles.
That is super nerdy, John.
I know. And that's the first adventure. Then, when that doesn't have much for her to do, boom, Toronto. That's another 3,360 miles. Not much there. So they have this, she's going after, what is this, MPOX tanker or whatever, which they inconveniently don't tell me where is. So I'm going to ignore that and just assume she went straight from Toronto to the following stop in Newport Richey, Florida, which is another 1,000 miles or whatever. That's like 10,000 miles of travels for poor Pickles. And he's getting some Twinkies for all of this. And she's not getting a whole lot of adventuring, because everything was taken care of right before she gets there.
Yeah.
So that means somebody else is making those same trips even faster without a teleporting Bamf like Pickles.
That's true, because although Bamfs are throughout that title, I don't ever remember them kind of establishing the long distance Bamfing ability.
And I'm not saying they haven't. I'm just saying, clearly these things have abilities far beyond those of Nightcrawler, not only in terms of distance, but how they know where to go. They're like, I need to go reread when they set these Bamfs up initially, beyond just being pranksters at the mansion, but when they started being kind of the get out of town free card or whatever for the new X-Men, all new X-Men, which is different than the new X-Men, of course, because that would just be confusing otherwise. I thought the reveal of who had been doing all this stuff and making the trips faster was, I didn't see it coming because I didn't look. If I'd thought about it at all, it's like I would have seen it coming. And then we get into the relationship stuff. And this, frankly, I thought it was heavy-handed. It was dialogue-heavy. The issue would have been better without it. And it was the whole point of the issue. So, not a strong point there. To me, one of the high points of the issue was, again, how young Cyclops was used early in the story. And then this bit at the end where they tease an old X-Men villain might be resurfacing in this title soon. There are a lot of old X-Men villains that make sense to bring back. Not sure this is one of them. This is one with a fairly complex and convoluted backstory, which probably doesn't narrow it down in terms of ex-villains, but this is one that I think to properly give the backstory of, you actually need to sit down and diagram it out to explain it to people to give the full context. It is nuts. And again, this isn't the X-book I would bring that character back in. I thought this was entertaining-ish, but your comment about it's not enough to make you regret dropping the title or get you back on it, I totally get that. For me, as somebody who's been reading this title pretty much nonstop and actually kind of enjoying aspects of the relationship between Wolverine and Angel, I thought this kind of backpedaled on it and didn't do a great job with it. it had a few things here and there that worked okay for me, a few things that it's like, really? I don't buy this. I'm going to go with a C plus and perhaps be a little charitable in doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a C minus. And yeah, for all the reasons, it wasn't engaging. I did enjoy the very beginning with young Cyclops. That was good, but not enough to kind of overcome what this story was, and just not for me.
Yeah. Well, and the whole thing with Cyclops there was really just a throwaway scene to get the rest of the story moving.
Yeah.
It was purely very perfunctory and functional in purpose, yet it was one of the more interesting aspects. And it's funny because I think they could have played up his planning and all of that stuff in a single issue story where he's actually doing that. And we get a not so much a recap, but a rundown of everything they've been dealing with and the current status of all of those threats or something. They could have given us just a single issue quick update on tons of characters, events, and things like that, and maybe start to form a picture that, ooh, wow, I wonder what happens next. But we didn't get that. We get, here's a bag with a BAMF, have fun.
I mean, it felt like a filler issue.
I think it was meant to be a breather issue between action arcs, not a filler issue, but I agree with your assessment. And that's, I think, a failure of the issue. We should have seen it as a good character, you know, introspection issue or whatever, mm-hmm. and loved it and moved on. But
I mean, it's tough when her standalone title is, you know, firing on all cylinders, and then someone's not quite handling the character the same way at the same level of quality.
Yeah.
And it's tough when you start from that position and try to get anything out of it. It's like the last thing we read where Vision was in there, and, you know, coming off a Vision standalone title, it's tough when you're reading something at a very, very high level, and then that same character in somebody else's hands just doesn't quite crackle the same way, doesn't have the same sizzle, and it just affects the entire book.
And it doesn't seem like it should be that hard for the writer of the solo book and the writer of the team book to talk.
Or at least their editor.
Or at least have, yes.
Bridge the gap.
This is the take we have on the character at the moment in this universe. Stay kind of within these bounds or something. That seems reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's a high expectation. So all of that having been said, shall we move on to our other book?
We must.
This is Lone Ranger Green Hornet number 2 from Dynamite Entertainment. It is written by Michael Uslan, and we've got Giovanni Timpano on the art. Did you read the first issue for this?
No.
So I'm going to imagine you're a little bit lost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Way lost.
The first issue gave some good backstory on the Lone Ranger beyond just, you know, he had adventures, but kind of what happened to him a little after that, and kind of set the scene of Britt Reed, his father, Dan, dies and basically is trying to coax his uncle, John, the Lone Ranger, into mentoring his son, Britt, to become the new Lone Ranger. So that's the basic premise.
Yeah, got that.
And it's clearly not going well. Overall, I enjoyed this issue, but one of the things that really struck me more in this issue than the previous was I felt the writer, Mike Uslan, was getting a little indulgent in places. I mean, the toast to the great heroes of the Old West in the first scene that went for a couple of pages.
Another appearance by Teddy Roosevelt. So he's all over comics these days.
He is. Which I'm okay with. It was
I'm not anti Teddy Roosevelt. It seems odd that he's been in multiple books and he's been dead for a long, long time. And there's tons of presidents to choose from.
Well, out of the 44 presidents, there's always the current one that gets a little bit of a favor sometimes in the comics. We'd seen that last week in Suicide Squad Rebirth, I think it was. There's Kennedy that is often involved with time travel stories. Beyond mm-hmm. that, Lincoln, yep. Washington, and I would be hard. I mean, there are at least 35 to 40 other presidents that are completely getting the short end of the stories. Absolutely.
When is Taft going to get some love? I tell you,
Grover Cleveland is the one I wonder about.
Yeah. What was he doing in between terms? I gotta know.
Untold Tales of the Presidents. That's a new title somebody's got to come out with.
That sounds like a Dynamite title.
Yeah. Who were the guys who did Action Philosophers? That's kind of who I was thinking.
Mm.
And they may have already done a President's one. Anyways, so yeah, having Teddy here was fun. But the whole Great Heroes of the Old West felt overly indulgent, as did this kid buying like 10 copies of Action Comics number one. And some of these are just throwaway things, but it gets a little in the way of the story. And then using Elliot Ness as, well, he's a historical cop. Let's toss him in. Any character could have fit that role without it feeling kind of like name dropping.
Yeah, I get that. I was beginning to think, boy, this is a really crowded neighborhood with all these famous people.
Yes.
You know, in the same area, interacting so much. It's amazing. And, you know, they're doing something similar in Rough Riders over at Aftershock, but it's done a little more deftly, and they put the gang together and it made sense. This just seems like happenstance. You know, all these people just seem to cross paths.
And that's the difference. Happenstance versus somebody recruiting. To me, it's a very different vibe. And the recruiting aspect over in Rough Riders makes a lot more sense. Whereas here, it gives the feeling, like you said, of contrivance, of coincidence, of happenstance, of it just, you know, convenience of storytelling. And to me, that goes to the indulgence on the writer's part.
Yeah.
And
it's a crutch, you know. I don't know that I can make this this character interesting, but he's much more interesting if he's Elliot Ness than if he would just be a cop.
Yeah, yeah. I can lean on that.
I can lean on that because the writing's obviously not strong enough.
And it felt a little just like name dropping, you know. The one part of this story-wise that just bothered me in this issue, because I enjoyed the first one quite a bit. I thought it was a good kind of a bridging of the two characters that have always been rumored to be related. Now we're really getting it and seeing it in action. But how the Lone Ranger, long since retired, old man now, is trying to convince the soon-to-be Green Hornet that you really want to be the Lone Ranger. And he's like, no, I want to do things differently. You know, I want to pretend to be in league with the criminals so I can, you know, turn him, you know, defeat him from the inside or whatever. It's like, well, the Lone Ranger would never do that. And he's like, yeah, I know. That's why I don't want to be the Lone Ranger. And John Reed, the Lone Ranger, keeps butting heads with him on this. And I'm like,
over and over again.
Clearly, Britt's thinking along different lines. And the Lone Ranger should have jumped at that and said, you know what? I don't want this guy to be the next Lone Ranger. I want him to be his own hero. This Lone Ranger felt fundamentally different and a little out of character, more so than just having aged 50 years or whatever, than the Lone Ranger I recall reading early on when Dynamite first started doing the Lone Ranger comics. That Lone Ranger actually reminded me more of Britt here than of John. I was having problems getting past that aspect of the story. And then there's the art. The art is uneven. There are panels that are very clearly in my mind having been done using Poser or Daz Studio, which in and of itself I have zero problem with, and I'm actually very impressed when somebody can pull that off well. Here they didn't pull it off well. There are a couple of panels where the
reactions don't even match what's going on in the panel, and some of these facial expressions really don't. They don't line up with what's happening in the story. And you're just thinking, are they just reusing some stuff that they had that they were sketching? And I don't know why they would choose some of these interpretations and some of these expressions in certain situations. It seemed odd to me.
In Poser, there are certain expressions built into the software that you just pick the character, double click the icon, and boom, he now has that expression. And there were a few places, the dropped jaw kind of thing the kid has when he's buying the comics, that felt that way. A few things near the end with the Lone Ranger where it felt like, you know, he's got the one expression and they just use that a couple of times in different panels from slightly different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that as any sort of limitation on the software. I know the software can do way more than that. It just felt like either this was a little rushed, and there are a couple of places where the lighting was a little either overly dramatic or I don't know. There were some places where I thought the art was not bad, and there are others where it's like, you know, this just isn't working for me. And I think this is something where Poser or Daz Studio was being used for some of the art, and then they were coming in some areas and then penciling on top of it for certain aspects that were just either too hard to model, not worth modeling, or whatever.
Yeah, there were some things like, you know, the mask in the box, you know, that was a really cool rendering of that mask, and
mm-hmm.
it was really well done. And then, you know, you see the two panels later, the expression on the guy's face, and you're just thinking, that looks like it was reused from somewhere that's not out of context. It just doesn't fit. You know, the paper boy's eyes, they're out of whack. I don't understand what's going on there. It pick a page, and within a page or two, you'll find one. You'll find a problem.
Well, in the Lone Ranger's reaction shot you were mentioning there, to me, it reminds me of one of the stock kind of poses. And frankly, isn't that different than we get on, Jesse Owens there on the second to last panel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's...
And I'm a little more forgiving if this is a back half, you know, really small publisher. Dynamites, they've got shelf space in retail shops. You know, they put out quite a few books. I want higher quality art out of them than I do out of, you know, a creator owned piece or something, or a small publisher that's maybe putting out three or four books. You know, I can be a little more forgiving. This they're a mid-major. They need to be a little better.
I guess for me, my expectation is this is a little bit of a big deal, taking the two properties and mixing them together like this. So you want to have better art on that. And again, I don't have any problem with the tools used. I have problems with the way in which they were used. It felt almost, I don't say cavalierly, but it felt rushed. And I'm not trying to knock the artist. I think he's actually got a couple of things here where it shows a lot of promise. And I think if he had had more time, we might have gotten a better issue out of this. But I do expect better. And I felt I got better on the previous issue. And maybe I just need to reread that, and maybe I didn't get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think sometimes when, you know, I mean, I like trying stuff like this and seeing if it clicks with me. And you're rooting for these comics, and you know, they're like you said, these are two big properties. They could have been something. Could have been telling a really interesting story and really been engaging. And it just fell flat. It wasn't meant to be this time.
What gets me is I did not feel that way about the previous issue. I thought the first issue was strong.
Yeah.
And I think this one just got a little more indulgent in some ways that didn't work for me. The bullheadedness of the Lone Ranger character kind of didn't work for me either. And then there were some art issues that perhaps if I take another look at the first issue, maybe I will, maybe I won't find them there too. This doesn't, you know, tank the miniseries in my mind, but it certainly puts it in that it had some, again, a couple of things here and there that I liked. Kind of the origin here of this Green Hornet and stuff was cool, but I was hoping for a lot better than we got here. I'm going to go with a C+. If the art had been a little more solid.
This is, you've got this on par with all new X-Men.
For different reasons.
Okay. All right.
I thought the art on All New X-Men was better. And it's one of those things that I can easily, there are things about both that I think need to be improved, but there are also things about both that I thought were fun and entertaining. To me, it was something that if there had been stronger editorial guidance and a little less indulgence on the part of the writer and either more time or a little more skill or whatever on the artist's part, this really could have shaped up to have been something wonderful. So it's got those things lurking under the surface. I just wanted more of it actually on the printed page than we got.
Yeah, I didn't like anything about it. I didn't like the art. I didn't like the story. I thought it just meandered way too long. Grumpy Lone Ranger was not appealing at all, and he was a grumpy old man through most of this. Some of the plot points were just I didn't follow what the author was trying to say, and his artist wasn't really interpreting things properly, and it wasn't showing on the page. This is something I would not recommend it anyone to read unless you are a diehard Lone Ranger and or Green Hornet fan and just can't get enough. Otherwise, there's nothing here for you. And if you're a new reader walking into the comic shop, I would flip these over so that you didn't pick these up and get a bad sense for what comic storytelling could be all about. I think this is a D minus, and not something I would want anyone else to read.
Harsh, but I can understand that. There are certainly way better examples of what comics can offer than this. I really think I need to reread that first issue.
I would be surprised if the art was head and shoulders above it, but maybe they took their time with that one and then got off schedule.
I don't know, but yeah, something weird.
Something happened.
Something, yes. And either it was with the comic or it was with me, and it could be either. Who knows? So I am still working my way through catching up on my reading. I have plenty of things left to read. This is one of those things where, man, catching up after Comic-Con is just tough.
I'm through the 27th of July and halfway through the 3rd. So where are you at?
How many books do you get each week?
I'm just saying.
Okay, the week of the 13th, I got 51 comics. I've still got 23 of those to read. The week of the 20th, I got 53 comics. I've still got 26 of those to read. The week of the 27th, I got, I think, 58 comics.
I'm not comparing us. I'm asking where you're at so I don't talk about something you already read.
Fair enough. I'm doing good to tread water. I am most of the way. I'm almost done with DC. I think I'm current on Valiant. And I've been trying to go almost publisher by publisher.
Mm.
Because otherwise, it's just I can't get into the current week. If we look at stuff from this week...
No, nothing. I've read nothing this week.
Oh, well, I've read a few things. See what the hell I have read this week. This is where it's challenging for me just to keep track of these things. Read the two all-new, all-different Avengers, the issue 13 and the annual. Those are okay. Flash this week was good. Action Comics, of course. Have you read All-Star Batman?
What'd you read on the 27th?
Okay, we'll go back to the 27th. That's fine. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Let me start with the week of the 13th for July. We'll do a quick catch-up.
Okay.
Work our way through that. Action Comics, Detective Comics, those are great. Star Trek, again, I talked about that a week or two back. Loved that. Looking forward to getting that next issue of Star Trek, I think maybe next week.
Is that the last one?
Yeah. Before they do the Star Trek Boldly Go or whatever new title. Let's see. Read the Scooby-Doo Where Are You issue I picked up because DCBS had a bundle on it with the other Scooby-Doo. And I'm like, okay, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. It was good, but I would have preferred a full issue length story versus one that was a little shorter and a couple of like really short stories. Again, trying to keep up on things like the new Superman, Nightwing Rebirth. Of course, we talked about Nightwing already. Ninjak. That's Civil War stuff. I'm trying to keep up on that, too. If we jump to the week of the 20th, Archer and Armstrong, yeah. All-New Wolverine, Aquaman, Astro City, of course. Batman, great stuff. Enjoyed Betty and Veronica. We talked about Black Hammer when we reviewed that ahead of time.
I really like Adam Hughes, seeing Adam Hughes every week. Every month in doing his own book. That's cool. I'm not sure if he's as strong a writer, but it just started. So I'll give it some time.
Yeah. But by and large, I think the entire Archie reboot has wound up being just incredibly successful and really has worked. I've been really pleased with that. The Scooby Apocalypse is really fizzling out for me. That's one that, I'm trying to think if I have more issues on pre-order or not. At this point, I'm probably not going to keep getting it.
Yeah, I actually like it.
Different things, different people. That's fine.
It's not top of the stack, but I'm still reading it.
Yeah. Squadron Supreme that week. A couple other things here and there. We jump now to the week of the 27th, which is what you were asking about. Action Man. I enjoyed the second issue of that. I thought that was fun. Captain America, Steve Rogers, they are definitely getting some attention on that book.
You read Cryptocracy from Dark Horse? Or was that just something you sampled the first issue of?
I just sampled the first issue of that.
Oh, okay.
Did not stick with that. What else do we have? This was just one of those weeks that was big for me.
This was a big week, yeah. And you thought the Nightwing momentum continued from the Rebirth?
We talked about that issue. We reviewed that issue.
Did we do Rebirth or the first issue?
We did the first issue.
Okay. Okay.
And I thought I gave it a C+ for the first issue, and I thought Rebirth actually was a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. How are you liking the Wonder Woman flip flop?
I'm liking the odd issues. Let me rephrase. I'm trying to remember if those. I'm liking the origin story back on Paradise Island more so than the present day stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the even issues then that I'm liking more than the odd.
Did you try ROM?
Have not gotten to that one yet.
Yeah, yeah. You can just leave that there.
Yeah, I'm curious where the Hasbro stuff's going to go over at IDW, if that's going to work or not. They've got a lot of stuff they're trying to do, trying to integrate that into its own narrative universe, which could be fun,
mm-hmm.
but it may be a swing and a miss. Again, reading, trying to keep up on the Civil War 2 stuff, enjoying a lot of that.
You liking Mockingbird as much as I am?
I'm not current on that one.
Okay.
What I have read, I have enjoyed. And it had enough of a Dunham one-ish feel to it that was working for me. But that's also a technique they used over on Black Widow to, I won't say mixed results, because I'm not sure. That was the previous volume they did that on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they obviously went to a new volume, so one could question how well that worked.
There were a couple of throwaway issues for Mighty Thor that were like Loki side stories that were really terrible. But besides that, Thor is just as good with the female Thor as it was with the male Thor with the previous volume, which was really good. So it's surprising how strong that continues to be for me.
I'm still an issue or two behind on that, but overall, I would agree with your assessment there. Swapping out Thors did not slow that book down at all, and that's one of the strengths I think Marvel has right now. Is they can swap out lead characters and still tell good stories. And depending how they play their cards, they could get and kind of repeat what they did back in, I think it was the 90s, where you swap out Thor for a replacement. The replacement goes on to be Thunderstrike, and you get the original Thor back. You got two titles going. You know, kind of like we have with the two Captain Americas. You know, I don't know that I really doubt they're going to do that with this Thor. But you never know. It depends how they end the arc.
I haven't got a chance to listen to your Mayor reports yet, so I'm not sure if you touched on the sheer volume of Marvel titles that are getting cranked out here. I mean, I think it's like 100 some months. It's like 112 to DC 60 or something like that. It's almost double the amount of stuff that they're throwing on the shelves for their market share. Is that influencing you at all or stressing you at all to think, maybe I need to trim a little of the fat here?
It's certainly influencing the order I read stuff in. Part of why I have not done what I would typically do of just go week by week is, again, most of these weeks are 50, in one case, nearly 60 comics. I'm not reading fast enough at the moment with other stuff going on to do that, but if I can at least feel like I'm not getting further behind and are getting current in certain areas, that helps. But Marvel, there's just so much stuff that they've produced. Out of the 241 comics, and this is everything from the week of July 6th till now, which has, the August 10th shipment, so 6 weeks worth of stuff. The number of things I have from Marvel is 95 out of that. Why is it telling me I have 95 out of 256 records if I am saying I have... Hang on. Well, that's... I threw together a spreadsheet trying to keep track of all of this, and I think it has an error in there somewhere. Anyways, about a third of what I'm getting, well over a third actually, is Marvel. So just keeping current on Marvel it's tough. I've got, I think, three issues of Daredevil to read, three of Old Man Logan. This stuff is, I blink and another couple of issues have come out.
Yeah, I think Marvel has higher highs right now compared to DC. Some of their top tier titles are much better reads than some of DC's, but they just have a lot of stuff that's just really average, and a lot of it high volume. So it kind of pulls down the average for me. I have to mention that Crossed Badlands number 100 came out that week on the 27th and finished 100 issues strong for that run, and was stuff that you would never read, but I loved it, and it was a great capper. And they, hopefully Garth Ennis comes back soon and puts out another volume.
Cool. I mean, if you find stuff you like and it's working for you, that's awesome, and I hope they do continue. Yeah, 95 out of 241 comics were from Marvel for me.
That's a ton.
Yeah, it's, 6 weeks worth of stuff? So, you know, do the math there. It's, there is getting to a point where keeping up on this is challenging. Do I want to keep up on certain ones is certainly starting to be a question. And what surprises me is I've had 1 or 2 weeks where the, because I'm still rating everything I'm reading, and I've had 1 or 2 weeks where the ratings are just all over the board, from a low of like a I think I gave 1 or 2 things a D or a D minus or something, to a high of, you know, an A plus or something. So I mean, the perception of quality is just all over the place in my mind.
Yeah.
There are,
I mean, even in my smaller sample size of about 30 a week, it's the same way. Sometimes you're just blown away by the sheer quality of the book. And then the next one you read, you're like, oh my goodness, how did this even get made?
Well, and there are a couple of things where looking at the rating from week to week on a given title, I kind of seeing it tick down.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder why that is. Is that me? Is it the book? Oh, you know, what's going on there?
I'd be curious what you're thinking of. A Black Panther.
I'm thinking I'm 2 issues behind, and if I'm not quick, I'll probably be a 3rd issue behind before I get to those.
Oh, I would like to see your graph of all your grades on that one when you get caught up. See which way it's trending. I'd be curious.
I need to find a way to chart some of this. I can't do it on a title by title basis because it's just too much data. But kind of averaging by publisher doesn't make sense either. Because again,
right.
Certain publishers have things that I'm just loving, and wow, that really was a tragedy or something.
I guess there'd be some interest in that, especially since you're all in on a couple of publishers, to kind of compare the average scores between the two. That might be interesting.
Given the difference in output, it benefits one over the other, although I'm not sure which it really benefits. Does it benefit Marvel because they've got more, and therefore the misses get averaged out? Or DC because they've got less, but it's there's so much going on. If you can't find something to read, I am amazed. I'm struggling to find the time to read stuff. And I'm again trying to make a point of getting the list of what I have left to read down. It's down to, I think, about 114. It was at 116 last week, so it's not down by much. But it's a net gain in that respect versus a loss, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, yeah. Keep chipping away, man.
That's the goal. Once I get it all chipped away, then it's going to be a matter of, can I find the time to do a back issue spotlight that I told Sam we'd do, and a few other things. So I got plenty I want to do.
Yeah, I think I've changed my strategy. I'm going to kind of finish the entire week before I move on to the next week, minus whatever we have to do for this show. So I was finding that I was trying to devour everything by either our podcast on Tuesday or my podcast on Friday, and I wasn't able to kind of enjoy the issues as much because I was rushing through them. So I kind of reevaluated how I want to do that. Because first and foremost, I want to enjoy reading my comics.
Yeah, and that's part of why I'm not just trying to plow through these as quick as I possibly can.
I don't want it to be a chore. I don't want it to be dismissed. So I've kind of altered the way I do it. And I think that's going to, you know, how that's going to be a problem is I'm not going to be as current as you going forward. You know, I won't have read a lot of the stuff in that week as much as you have, because I'm going to take my time a little bit more so that I can read everything. I mean, of course, I'll read the things we review, but I don't know that I'll be as current as you sometimes are with comic slates.
Well, the flip side is I may be current, but I tend to be forgetful. I mean, I made a point this week, since we were reviewing the all-new X-Men, to catch up on the X-Men team books, of which there's plenty. But, you know, I didn't have time to go read, you know, necessarily. I think I'm current on all-new Wolverine, but again, Old Man Logan, a few of these other things. But the stories, if they're well-written, are forgiving if you either have not read yet or have not read at all. particular storylines, arcs, or whatever. If you've got to be all in on everything to enjoy this stuff, then they're doing it wrong. You know, and I know when I have conversations of, oh, I'm this far behind, I've got, you know, 100 and some odd items on my list, there's going to be somebody listening who's thinking, there aren't that many good things. And you know what? You're right. There's not. There are many things in just what I've read so far, the other, 175 items or something, that we'll say 48 of those things, so less than a quarter, more than a quarter, less than a third, I guess, are B minus or below. But also, very few things are in that A category. Actually, a surprising number are in that A category. It's just, I have a somewhat more open-minded and accepting level of what I will read versus a lot of people that will only read the absolute best of the best of the best. I've got typically more time to allow for that than I currently do, but you know, it gives me that context to where when I'm reading some of the stuff, I can fill in some of the gaps. The downside is when I'm reading some of the stuff, it gets a little muddled in some of those gaps as to, wait, where was this character at? Did they really establish this? You know.
And I wonder if there's a breaking point for even you. I mean, if Marvel starts putting out 200 books a month.
Oh, absolutely.
If DC sees the success they're having in their double shipping titles and they start increasing the numbers to 100, 150, it'll either squeeze out every other publisher out of your list, or you'll really have to make, I don't know if you'll have the time, even you.
If Marvel were to radically, if any publisher were to radically increase their output, they run the risk of me going from the few that I'm all in on to not being all in to, I tend to drop publishers, not titles. And I've gone through that at points in the past where, even if it's not titles, it's entire franchises or something. They're better off getting my money over the long haul in smaller amounts than trying to grab it all at once.
Yeah.
I think they're that way across the board for everybody. And it's not so much the frequency so much as the perception of enjoyment, which is a hard thing to do a metric on. But right now, the titles at DC I would hang on to, if I had to go down to like five, would be Action Comics, quite possibly Superwoman, Detective Comics, you know, the things that are really clicking with me, and very clearly so, you know, whereas others can just go away. It's if they're telling good stories, I want them to come out faster. If they're telling okay stories, it can go, you know, maybe 3 weeks instead of every two.
Take your time. Take your time.
But it's funny because there are a couple of titles. It's like, when am I getting this next issue of this? Versus I blinked and I've gotten the next issue, you know? Again, the every other week thing is, you know, we're reviewing something, and when we're picking ahead of time before we record this for the listeners, you know, what are we going to do in 2 weeks? And the same items are on the list. It's like, geez, man. So I do think there's a breaking point. I do think they run the risk of not just myself, but a lot of people hitting that if they're not careful. But it's easily mitigated, or it's not easily. It is mitigatable by just producing some really top quality stuff.
And there's a lot of that, too.
There is. And it's different things for different people as to what they consider top quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly not expecting people to listen to what I say saying, oh my God, this is brilliant, you must read it, to necessarily agree with me. But if they've listened to enough of these episodes to understand what I like and what I don't, and they know what they like and what they don't, even if we're diametrically opposed, they should be able to calibrate accordingly and say, you know, gosh, I gave this a lousy review, they're going to love it.
I think they can pretty safely assume that Superwoman would be a good choice from this week to read.
I think so, but I think there are also going to be a contingent of readers out there who will hate it.
Yeah.
It's steeped in the continuity.
I don't know about that.
It's verbose, it's dense, and if that's not what they want, they could rebel against it. I think it's great stuff.
Pretty interesting, though.
But I don't think it's necessarily for everybody. I don't think anything is for everybody.
That's true.
But it's certainly one they should give a chance to due to the quality. And again, I'm looking forward to more on that. Couple other things before we call it an episode. And thank you for reminding before we recorded about this. I want to mention Chris Marshall has restarted the Collected Comics Library after about 10 months of this whole life thing or whatever he was talking about. He's decided he missed doing the podcasting. He's gone back to it. Already has a couple of new episodes out.
Podcasting is like the mafia.
Yeah.
You try to get out, but they pull you back in.
He does, I think, the hardest form of podcasting, which is the solo podcast.
Yeah,
and he does it tough. Well, he is incredibly knowledgeable on the collected comics side. So I am really glad he's back at it. He's a terrific guy. So I was quite pleased to hear that. I want to thank Jason from Hawaii, who had mentioned it on the preview spotlight. That was how I first realized that was happening. It was before Chris had sent an email out. So yeah, anyone who enjoyed his episodes in the past, I've got a link on the website, I think under the podcast stuff. I think in that list I've got a link to your show, Drew, I think. If not, I should. Pretty sure I've got that. Chris's show, a few others that are worth checking out, you know, the Cowabunga Cowcast, stuff like that. The next Comic Book Page teleconference is going to be on Saturday, September 3rd at 7 p.m. Central. That's probably smack dab in the middle of Labor Day weekend, isn't it? This is where that whole, you know, first Saturday after previews doesn't always work out well. But that's when we've scheduled it for. So if people make it, they make it. If they don't, they don't. But if you are going to make it, please post on the forum that you're planning on being there. Just so
Labor Day weekend. Yep.
Yeah. I didn't think that through. Oh, well. I can't really do it the next weekend then, though, because that's going to be the deadline for the preview spotlight submissions on Saturday, September 10th, and it's probably going to be the weekend that the August numbers come out.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little busy for me. But if people want to talk about comics, comic book sales, movies, TV, whatever else, the teleconference is a great time to do it. And then I'm going to be recording between now and the next time we talk and record the next weekly comic spotlight. I'm going to record with both Sam and then TJ for the Mayo reports. Those are getting out a little bit later than they might otherwise, just because of the deluge of episodes coming out of Comic-Con and such. But I'm going to try to get those back onto a more slightly more timely basis. But that's also going to be, Drew, why the next time we have this conversation of, so where are you at on your reading, John? It may not be, hey, I'm done.
I won't ask.
No, you should. It's a fair question. I'll catch up eventually. It's just so much going on, so much great stuff. Yeah. So anything else, or should we call this an episode finally?
Let's call it an episode.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 1 from DC, Star Wars Poe Dameron number 5 from Marvel, and Briggsland number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.